My name is Patsy Rodecca, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody, and I'm a member of Good Standing in the New Smyrna Beach group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a joy to be here with you tonight. Can you hear me? I'm on my tiptoes. Thank you. I consider it a privilege and a joy to be here, and I want to take just a moment to thank the committee, Maggie, whom I love dearly, Marge, who I haven't seen for many years but love dearly, and these people that have been kind enough to invite me here and allow me the privilege of talking with you and sharing with you the most important thing in my life. I could tell you about my trip to Europe, and I could tell you about my, the summer we had the two teenage grandchildren. I could tell you about two very serious heart attacks I have suffered quite recently. I could tell you about the death of my firstborn son, who would have had 15 years sobriety had he lived till the 2nd of October, of July. But that's not what I'm here. Honey, they are just experiences that we have. And none of them, individually nor collectively, were a reason to take a drink. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I love the privilege of standing up before you and sharing with you, simply because it brings back so vividly from whence I came. I look pretty nice tonight. I'm sober. I'm clean. I feel clean. I'm fairly well groomed. I'm coherent, whether I make any sense to you or not. And honey, I got fingernails. Now that will not mean a thing to anyone else in this room unless they've been a habitual nail biter all their life. I have to be honest, this one's artificial, just that one. And I never had fingernails till I came to AA. I don't have a prepared speech for you because I'm not a public speaker. But I'm prepared. At one time in my life, I spent over half of my life pursuing the disease of alcoholism. I didn't know it. It frightens me today when I think of the diabolical determination I had to become one of you people. So I'm qualified to be one of you. By the grace of God and the help of you people, people just like you, once again, almost half my life, I have remained sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that prepares me to stand before you tonight. And if any one of us, and me, are made aware of any one thing tonight, then I will have served my purpose here. I don't believe I was born an alcoholic. I certainly didn't intend to become an alcoholic, and I didn't intend for my life to turn out the way it did. I didn't wake up one morning and say, I think I'll be an alcoholic. I worked very hard and very long to become one of you. I had to cast aside and step aside from everything that was good and clean and decent in my life. I am weak, so if the voice fails, say a prayer for me. But I had to step aside and cast aside everything that was good and clean and decent in my life because it interfered with my drinking. I blasted through the lives of everyone I touched, and you don't know what it means to me today to sit over in that coffee room and touch your life gently and with love. It is indeed a privilege. I say I don't believe I was born an alcoholic. I don't touch that controversy. Because if my daddy was living, we'd have three generations in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't touch the controversy of whether I'm recovered or I'm recovering. Hell, I'm... Oh, I wasn't going to cuss. I am here, and I haven't had a drink today. And that's all that I'm concerned about. I would like to share with you the first drink I ever had. And I was sober 14 years in Alcoholics Anonymous before I remembered that very first drink. Because when I came to you, memory would only serve to back at the time it became a problem, or it was interfering with my life, or the physical compulsion and the mental obsession that I knew nothing at all about was taking place in my life. And one night, DeLand held a meeting in our little group, and for some reason, everybody was talking about the very first drink. Well, it was at a high school party. It was during Prohibition days, and don't a one of you start counting on your fingers. The boys had a flask on their hip, and I wanted to make out with that crowd. I wanted to be accepted, and I wanted to fit in. And I found myself in the back seat of an automobile taking a straight slug from the jug for the first time in my life. I didn't have many drinks before these people took me home, and I couldn't understand that. I was doing things I never did before in my life for these people so they would like me and so they would accept me, and they took me home and dumped me. I got violently ill. My stepmother came into the bathroom, and I told her it was the chocolate ice cream at the party. Now, honey, 14 years sober, remembering that very first drink, I thought, oh my God, I didn't stand a chance. The very first drink I took, I got drunk, I got sick, and I lied about it. And that pattern didn't change a heck of a lot in the ensuing years. At a very tender age, I had loused up my life to such a degree that there was a prayer from the very fiber of my being, "Please God, let me make somebody happy before I die." And I meant it. And I found this young man, and I picked on him, and I married him. And to this day, I will never be able to answer the question, why did I take that man through almost 20 years of unadulterated hell? Because I was an alcoholic, and I was pursuing my disease. I didn't know it at the time. When I came to you, to my knowledge, I had been drinking for a period of 17 years. There was not a day in those 17 years that I did not have something to drink. I don't mean I was in a drunken stupor. I functioned. But I'm trying to tell you, I wasn't completely sober. I had 4 children in 6 years, so I was doing a little something else besides drinking. And I never will forget the feeling as the drinking progressed. And when my children would say, "Mama, if you're ashamed, if you're sorry, if you're humiliated," and I was all those things, "why do you go out and do it again?" And I had no answer for them. And it was because I was ashamed and sorry and humiliated. My God, I had to do it again. The beginning of self-loathing, self-condemnation, guilt, remorse was coming in, and I didn't know how to handle it except the oblivion of the bottle. I nearly killed myself with the PTA and the Chamber of Commerce and the Woman's Club and the Garden Club. I thought these were the attributes of a productive citizen, until some joker in AA told me they were my defenses in case you criticized my drinking. I don't have to tell you the roads I had to go down, the paths I had to travel in pursuit of my disease. You know, we all tell our story when we walk over the threshold of an Alcoholics Anonymous room. I'd like to share with you what is hopefully my last drunk. By this time, the marriage was in shambles. There was no discipline with the children. The finances were horrendous. And we owed every... But I was still married. We owed every bank and loan company in Orange County. And one day, I'm going in town to pay on some bills. This man I was married to, because at this point I really can't say my husband. This man I was married to said, "I better not let you pay those bills because you have a couple of beer joints to pass." Honey, that computed long before this country knew anything about computers. It went in there. I did not react to this at all. But as I say, it computed. I went into Orlando. I paid his bills. I passed his beer joints. And I got up on Orange Avenue. And I said, "Damn his soul, I'll show him." I went right into... Well, now, about this time, my story, honey, I'm living too long. Because the Angerbilt Hotel was a classy hotel back in the 50s in Orlando. And the cocktail lounge was the place that you went in with a wide brim hat, silk stockings, and white gloves. And now it's Flophouse. But it was classy then. And I couldn't understand why I would start out in the classiest place in town. And 4 or 5 days later, I wind up someplace behind the railroad station and wonder how in the name of God did I get here. And I was baffled by that, and I did not know until I came to you. This drunk lasted about 5 or 6 days. And a horrendous thing happened because I was drinking myself sober, and stark reality was coming in on me like a silver bullet train, and I was scared to death. I got on the bus to go home. These are not easy things to say. There was a man I was married to. There was a house that could not be called a home at this time. And there were four children. They did not know whether I was living or dead, in jail, in the hospital. And I know in my deepest heart, at that given time, they really didn't care. And I get on the bus to go home. And now I stand at the point in my story where every one of us stand together. Something happened. Whether it was in the cold light of truth, I realized I could not stop drinking. I knew I could not go home to do this over and over again. And I knew I would do it. I got off of the bus, and I was going back to the bar, because where else is there for drunk to go? A red traffic light stopped me, and I felt at that instant in my life that I wanted to stop drinking more than I wanted to breathe, and I knew I didn't know how. I looked at that red traffic light and I said, please God, don't ever let me take another drink as long as I live. To this day, honey, whether that's the first prayer I ever made or whether it's the first time God ever listened to me, I went right in a drugstore and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a half a block away from the club room. That half a block was 10,000 miles. And the only thought that filled my being was, if I can just make it there. I know today I was already willing to go to any length, and I didn't even know it. Someone met me at the foot of the steps, put their arm on my shoulder, and said, everything is all right now. They took me up the steps. The 12 steps were around the room. There was a brief explanation of them. And if there is such a thing as a blanket acceptance of our 12 steps, I believe I made it at that time, simply because they have become my life and my way of life and have sustained me. I was told that the answer to every problem in my life was in that big book. And believe me, when I came to you and I stopped drinking, the problems came. It was tested. It was tested well. It had to work in every circumstance of my life, or it wasn't worth the paper it was written on. This was about 5 o'clock in the evening, and as I mentioned, the wide brim hats and the white gloves, that's the way ladies went to town in those days. And the club rooms were kind of like a sanctuary. After work, you stopped in for a cup of coffee. If you were shopping, you stopped in for some conversation. And here I am sitting there, coming off a 5-day drunk, and all these lovely ladies coming in. There was one very lovely lady. She came over and told me I was pretty. I was a little younger then. I wasn't always a soul. She told me she loved me. She told me that you needed me. She made me sick at my stomach. And I upchucked right on that floor. Now, you talk about humiliation. I thought, if I can just get out of here, I ain't never coming back. That was humiliation. But then I saw this lovely lady. And for many years after that, I used to call Minnie Fair the Dame Elegante, because she was one elegant dame. She took that hat off, she took those gloves off, and she cleaned that floor. And I died. Oh, I'll never come back. Never. Just let me out. That, my friends, was humiliation. The humility came many years later when I got down on my own knees and cleaned the floor after a sick alcoholic. I don't know to this day if I would have done that had you not done it for me first. They took me home that night, and I was told to do two things. Oh, before they took me home, a little girl said, we better buy her a half a pint because she's going to need a drink. She's going to have a rough night. And that was music to my ear. But this man said, y'all excuse my profanity. This man said, hell no. Said, she's had the last drink. She can shake, she can sweat, she can die. But she's had the last drink she's going to get. And I did all those things for 3-4 days. But something was different. People just like you made me feel like you were shaking and sweating and dying with me. They let me out of the car and they told me to do two things. I would like to share this. Honey, if that drunk knew what to do, he wouldn't come to us. And it is our responsibility to tell them what to do. I was told to get down on my knees and thank God I'd found AA. I was told in the morning to get back down on my knees and ask God to help me go one day without taking a drink. That didn't make any sense to me. But honey, I did it. And to my knowledge, for the first day in 17 years, I did not take a drink of any alcohol. And then they said, get to a meeting tomorrow night. Get to a meeting tomorrow night. Not I'll pick you up. Not I'll meet you. I had to ride 2 city buses. I looked up and down the street before I went in the doorway. And the thought struck me, Patsy, when did you ever look up and down the street when you went in the bar? Makes sense. There was in those days, all the club rooms were on a second floor. And for some reason, known only to some drunk, They had the steepest flight of steps you ever had to walk up in your life. And on this landing, someone looked at me and said, Patsy, you went 24 hours without a drink. I said, yes. He said, that is as long as you'll have to go without a drink until the day you die. So I had no trouble with that awful, awful experience of never take another drink as long as I live. What am I going to do? Who am I going to do it with? Because this guy had cut it down to 124 hours. This what am I going to do and who am I going to do it with is a question that enters every new person's mind. Believe me when I tell you, you just don't take that first drink, and the day will come you will not have the time to do all the things you want to do in AA. I went to your meetings. I read your book. I told them I would try to take those steps. I would not take that first drink. But if they thought I was ever going to get up in front of anybody and talk about me the way they did, forget it. I lie a lot. They threw the big book at me. The questions were not answered. It was slammed on the table. It's in the book. The 12 and 12 had not come around to the little club rooms at that time. It had been printed, but the groups did not have money, the money that they have today, and the literature was slow in coming around. And we had a little book called the Little Red Book that was an explanation of the 12 steps, and we would have our study group meetings with that. The Little Red Book was the first thing that was given me. And I was so mixed up. You know, if any of you have ever seen it, it has references to pages in the big book. And I was so mixed up that I would see those reference pages and I would turn to that page in the Little Red Book, lose all continuity, not know what they are, but I didn't take a drink. And it sustained me. Pretty soon, I was given a book. And please know this. The recovery program in Alcoholics Anonymous does not begin with chapter 5. There are 4 chapters before that. There were a couple of chapters that told me exactly what my problem was. And it was heavy. I had a disease that only a spiritual experience would conquer. Now that's heavy to lay on a drunk that is not even comfortable when you say the word God. I read about being like the man who had lost both of his legs and we don't grow new ones. Now that's kind of what that 5th chapter means when it says we stood at a turning point. That's a turning point. The next 2 chapters tell me what the solution is. And our cover of our book says textbook, so study it. I know what the problem is. I know what the solution is. But I don't know how to arrive at that solution. So certainly, I want to know how it works. AA is different, unique from anything else on the face of this earth. How many of you have had a doctor tell you, don't worry, but he don't tell you how? But another drunk told me not to take the first drink, and then he proceeded to give me clear-cut directions. I will certainly want to know how it works. Many of us make a federal case of these 12 steps. I was very fortunate in that I was guided through them, and they were explained, and they have been applied very simply and childlike. I came to you people with a very childlike approach to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you have allowed me, not childish, honey, but you have allowed me that childlike approach. It's awful hard for me today to when because some people come to AA and they go back out and drink again, you know. And I think everybody that comes to AA gets sober. And I'm kind of shocked when somebody goes out to drink again. Because the most normal, natural thing on the face of the earth for the likes of you and me to do is drink. We're alcoholic. To drink is normal and natural. And to be sober, that's abnormal. That's why we can't do it but one day at a time. That's why we can't do it for the rest of our life. But how was I going to, first, stay away from that first drink? I had my prayer in the morning and I had my thank you at night. There had to be more than that. Because the first or second chapter had told me I had to have a spiritual experience to conquer this. How am I going to have a spiritual experience? And then they gave me 12 steps. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, you are ready to take certain steps. And you'll hear him say, I said it. How soon do I take the steps? How soon do you want to get well? You're not too new to take your steps. I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. Here was an honesty I had never known the likes of before. When I came in, the preamble read, Honest Desire. It stayed just long enough to sock me, and then they changed it. I'm very grateful it was there for me. An honesty that I knew nothing at all about. But what happened in that first step? I have learned already that my disease is threefold. It is physical, it is mental, it is spiritual. There are three ways out. I'm going to lose my mind, I'm going to die, or I'm going to find a way to stay sober. You show me the steps, and right away I argued about importance of this and importance of that. And then someone told me, if I was hanging 50 feet in the air by 12 links of chain, for me to tell them which was the most important link. And that's about what you can do with our 12 steps. If your automobile broke down, you would take it to a garage mechanic. If your TV broke down, you would take it to a TV technician. And here I am, an alcoholic. The mind, the body, and soul in a state of complete collapse. Where else can I take it except back to its maker? The first step removed the bottle. And the physical, the healing processes for the physical aspects of my disease was being taken care of, and I didn't even know it. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Here perhaps a humility brought on by my own humiliations. I knew nothing of a higher power, but I knew you. And I knew what you told me, and I knew your book, and I knew what I read. And when I went to a meeting, 12 or 15 sober people at that table were indeed a power greater than me. And I was restored to sanity because that horrible mental obsession of believing I had to drink passed. And the healing processes for the mental aspects of my disease were taking place. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. The only thing that was asked of me in that step was to make a decision. That step has nothing at all to do with God's will. But if you're at all like me, you certainly tried to bring it in there somehow. All that was asked was make a decision. And perhaps in this step, there can be a hope that can become a faith by which I can live. And the healing processes for the spiritual aspect of my disease are being taken care of. No decision is any good unless we act upon it. and I had made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I didn't know what my will and my life was, so I had to take the fourth step. About here, I'm going to tell you something somebody told me. Read these steps exactly the way they are written. There are no superfluous words and there are no double meanings. It says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. The first time you go around with that step, you're going to try an immoral inventory. And you're going to crawl up on that cross. And you're going to stay there till it hurts so bad that you might listen to the joker that says, no, this is the way. It is suggested that we write that inventory. The writing is nothing more or less than to provide, as the book says, clear thinking and honest appraisal. And the written word, one written word will suggest 10. That step does not mean 50 legal size pages in a pad. You see, my first approach to these steps, I did not come into AA to get good. I didn't come in to get God, and I didn't come in to love nobody. I came in to try to stop drinking. So my first approach to my fourth step was finding out, all right, I told you my attitude when I went on my last drunk. Damn his soul, I'll show him. Think of the character defects that are manifesting themselves right there. I was going to look in the beginning at this fourth step, the things that might cause me to drink again. Don't stay on your fourth step so long it keeps you from taking the fifth. Find one or two things, write them down, have your meditation, go to another person, talk about that, and then chalk it off, kid. Go back to the drawing board again. It does not have to be a life history. Believe the book when it tells you there it will be revealed to you, and it will be in God's time and in God's way. This book tells me at that fifth step that I am entering the sunlight of the Spirit. And my personality, my pursuit of alcoholism, my self-will run riot, my anger and resentments, these have blocked me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And the fifth step allows me to enter. There is a little prayer after our third step that says, relieve me of the bondage of self. That's exactly what 4, 5, 6, and 7 do. I have been relieved of the bottle. I've been relieved of the obsession, believing I have to drink. I've got a chance at restoring some spiritual bankruptcy. And now I am going to be relieved of my own worst enemy. We usually stop right there, relieve me of the bondage of self. But the prayer continues. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. And honey, this is where it's happening. It's really happening. I am on a spiritual path. I am having a spiritual path. The beginning of a spiritual experience. They say that 6 and 7 separate the men from the boys. In 6, we became entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And in 7, we humbly ask God to remove these shortcomings. And it baffles me to this day, the reluctance and the pain and the agony that I allowed myself to go through in the rebellion of 6 and 7. When I came into AA with some measure of sobriety and understanding, I did humbly ask God. I was entirely ready to have him take care of my drinking problem. Now, your drinking problem, if you're an alcoholic, is the worst problem you got. And if you're taking care of that drinking problem, honey, you ain't got no problems. You got circumstances, you got experiences, you got situations. I was so willing, completely, entirely ready and humbly to have God remove this drinking. Why am I so reluctant to let go of the others? I wish I could tell you I have. I don't indulge in them quite as much. I wish I could tell you I'm completely honest. But I lie a lot. I wish I could tell you that I love everybody. But there's some people that drive me crazy. I'm real glad about that thing that we are not perfect. Thank God you and me don't have to be. But this is a beginning of a change in attitude, the sense of values, and the personality changes. Now, I am saying spiritual experience tonight simply because that's what it was in the book when I came in. But if this is too heavy for you, go into the Appendix 2 in the back of our big book, and it will explain that you need have no trouble at all with the phrase spiritual experience or spiritual awakening, because it's dealing with a personality change and attitudes sufficient to conquer our disease. Now, I'd be all right if I was in this world by myself and I didn't have to put up with anybody or cross anybody's path or be responsible for anything. But because I was that sick, suffering alcoholic, it don't excuse me from one thing I did, the harm I did and the hurt I caused to other people. And in time, the day of restitution must come. The 8th step says be willing to make a list. Make a list and become willing. Don't wait till you're willing to make your list. And if you have, it all ties in so simply, honey. If you have written your 4th step inventory, you've got a wonderful reference sheet for that 8th step. Make your list and become willing. If you ain't willing, do exactly what that book says. Pray till you are. And this is where the likes of you and me even dare to change the scriptures. There is something in the scriptures that says, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. Well, honey, at that 8th and 9th step, you better say, Lord, I'm willing, help my unwillingness. The unconscious, the subconscious rebellion that we're not even aware of. It's about this time in our recovery that we realize that God is operating the clock. Something is happening. After the 6th and 7th step, the book tells us we have entered the realm of the Spirit. Made direct amends. AA is the only place I know that demands that. I guess because it's so very vital to our recovery. I can break every civil law that has been put on the books. I can stand before the judge, have my sentence, serve my time, and come back into society. I will never have to have an eyeball-to-eyeball confrontation with the people I have harmed. Such is my belief that I can break every spiritual law known to man. And the love and grace of God, as I understand Him, can and will say, go and sin no more. And no eyeball-to-eyeball confrontation, but not in AA. Direct amends wherever possible, except one exception, when to do so would injure them or others. I was directed to the people that loved me the most because I was told they were the ones I had hurt the most. I was also told that if I went back, if my first amends was going to be paying my bar bill, I was establishing my credit for my next drunk. That bartender can wait. This eighth and ninth step has a magic, a release, and a relief. Every one of these steps grant us a freedom, a relief, and a release. Because today the young kids say, gotta stay in my now, gotta get in my now. Well, that's where that eighth and ninth step brings you right to your now. There's a freedom. We are free from people, places, and things. All those things that drove us to drink, we are staying sober in spite of. About this time, someone told me, the first step is going to let you in AA. Steps 2 through 9 will prepare you for AA. Steps 10, 11, and 12 are AA. Continued to take personal inventory, and when I was wrong, promptly admitted it. You notice the inventory is a little different in this step. It's a personal inventory. Because at this step, I am responsible. I've been to a lot of meetings. I've had several 24 hours without a drink. There is a change in attitude. There is a change in my sense of values and my standard. I've let go of the double standard. I'm going to meetings and I'm praying twice a day, whether I want to or not. And you and me are told, ask God to help you. Do you ever stop and think the dynamics of that? All I really think I'm saying is, please, God, help me go through this day without taking a drink. That's all I think I'm doing. But let's look at it again. There is an act of humility. I am asking for help. I am unable. There is an act of honesty. I cannot do it. And there is an act of faith, because we believe He will. Honey, they are powerful things with which to start your day, and we don't even know it. So at the 10th step, I am responsible. I'm responsible for my day's sobriety, my actions, my reactions, the words, the attitudes. I am responsible. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. I have to share this little thing with you. 3 months after I came into AA, this man I had been married to for almost 20 years and had 4 children by walked off and left me. And I could not understand this. I knew I was going to try to do something about my drinking. I wanted to be a good woman and I wanted to be a good mother. and I wanted to make amends for past wrongs. And this man left. The time came that the amends were made, but I could not understand what was happening to me. When it came to the children, there is no way in God's green earth I would ever know the pain, the humiliation, the shame, the insecurity, the bitterness, and even the hate that I had brought into their tender lives. And they might very well still feel that way, and I had to accept it. And believe me, honey, there were days, there were nights, when the only thing I had going for me was the fact that I hadn't taken a drink. I hadn't rocked the boat that day. I was sober about 5 years, and I remarried. And you see, I had never been a good wife, a good mother, a manager of household budgets and things like that. And here this man was giving me all his money every payday. And so one day a bill came in, and it was an envelope, window envelope, and it had a pink piece of paper behind it. And I knew what it was. I knew it was Dr. Bill. I was going to pay it. I had the money in the bank. I was going to write the check. But I hadn't done it. I remember I was still young and I was still procrastinating. I hadn't got around to working on that yet. And little later the day, my husband said, what was the mail? I'm 5 years sober, honey. I said, something from the blood bank. Saw that pink. Well, before 10 o'clock that night, I was violently ill. I was vomiting. I laid in that bed and I said, Dick, how soon is promptly? He said, honey, for you it was 2:30 this afternoon. Now, till the day that man died, I do not believe I ever told him another lie. And it was not because I wanted to get honest. I just didn't want to get sick no more. And that really is the way our progress in recovery is. I am told in the book that this whole thing is geared to discipline me in unselfishness and love. And at the close of my day, I can look at my 10th step. Wherein have I been lacking in unselfishness and love this day? And I can find my inventory. If there is restitution to be made, make it. An honest regret for the mistakes that have been made. A gratitude for what you've already been given. And that is sufficient. I can turn it over to the capable hands of God and turn over and go to sleep. The important thing in my 10th step is not to take yesterday's garbage into tomorrow. You see, when God grants you and me tomorrow, and honey, there are going to be those that aren't going to wake up in the morning. But if He grants it to you and me, it is a brand new, perfect day. It don't have a blotch, a smear on it. But before we go to bed tomorrow night, it will have a blemish. Some self-will, self-seeking, self-pity, anger, resentment. Something will touch it and take care of it today. Don't take it into tomorrow to spoil that beautiful day. After the tenth step, we are told we are in the world of the Spirit. And we continued to take, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. When I realized how I was supposed to read this step, I think I was the happiest person on the face of this earth. Because that 11th step tells you and me we've already got a conscious contact with God. Whether we know it or not, believe it or not, or feel it or not. Because we pray and meditate to improve it. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. That is heavy. A lot of us think that our puny minds can understand and comprehend the phenomenal will of God. Honey, forget it. Surely this is enough for me. Me, an alcoholic, surely it is the will of God that I be sober. That is sufficient for me. But if there are those among you that must know more, it is written, be joyful in all things. In everything be grateful. That's the good, that's the bad, that's the ugly. Joyful in all things. In everything be grateful. Pray without ceasing, for this is the will of God concerning you. If I don't take that first drink, if I am filled with joy, the joy of living, the joy of sobriety, the joy of loving and serving my fellow man, and if I am grateful in every experience that touches my life, and if I pray without ceasing, I do not have to concern myself with whether this God put this man in my life, or it's God's will about this job or this house. It will all follow in God's time and in God's way. Single purpose. It never amazes me that at the most weakest, desolate moment in my life, you people gave me a purpose. A no-count drunk woman. My primary purpose is to stay sober and try to help another alcoholic. And primary is first, and that makes everything else in my life secondary. And by that same token, it makes everything else in my life possible. Without it, there is nothing. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Oh, I gotta tell you something about that 11th step that hit me. About this time in my recovery, it was as if God was standing at that 11th step. And He said, honey, you said it in the third step. Do you mean it in the 11th? In the third step, it was my will that had gotten me into so much trouble. And that had been taken care. And now, in the 11th step, it is God's will and out of the driver's seat. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. There has indeed been a spiritual experience. Maybe not much of a walk in your eyes. Maybe not much success in your eyes, but none of us can see through the eyes of God. And for you and me, an alcoholic, if we can go to bed tonight and we haven't had a drink, we are a howling success, and don't you ever forget. How can there be a message without a messenger? And you and I are the messengers, the likes of you and me. Make your sobriety important to you. Make it exciting. Make it enthusiastic. Make it a vital thing in your life. And then sing it, and shout it, and talk it, and whisper it tenderly. And watch the dead in us come alive. Watch our despair rise to joy. Listen to the laughter from the belly of another drunk for the first time. That real first laughter. And we'll realize the full meaning of I am responsible. Each step, from each step, a principle will evolve. You will find your own. We will have found a way of life that will make it possible for the likes of you and me to go one day without one drink and feel impelled to share that with someone else. How many people are here with less than 2 years sobriety? God love you. That's what this is all about. And I want to tell you what you got going for you. Alcoholics Anonymous is 52 years old. Not one thing has been changed in the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous in over 50 years. Think of religion, education, medicine. Think of anything else, the changes, the innovations, the alterations. Not one thing has been changed in our recovery program. So don't get any ideas you can do anything about that. My earnest prayer is that the message that was given to me has not been diminished by my using it. Alcoholics Anonymous was here when my father needed it. It was here when I needed it. It was here when my son needed it. But you people that raised your hand, you knew people, honey, it is into your capable hands we are passing our program of recovery. And you must make it possible for my grandchild. I know you will, with the grace of God and the help of people like this in every AA room all over the world. I would like to mention my son coming into AA. I had been sober 19 years. I had buried my husband, and my son came down on vacation. Have I got time? My son came down on vacation, and this boy had never shared any of my AA life. He didn't go to AA meetings. He didn't go to the parties. He walked out of the room when we were talking. And you know, after you come in AA and sober up, honey, your world's going to be surrounded by drunks. They're either going to be drunk or sober, but the die's been cast when you come in here. And this boy comes down on vacation and he starts going to meetings with me. And I thought, well, he's just being nice to Mama. You know, I'm a widow and he knows this is my life and these are my friends. And he went to several meetings. And the night before he was to leave, someone in the meeting was saying, asking him, telling him they hoped he had a nice vacation and have a safe trip home, and did he have anything to say? And he said, My name is Jim, and I know now I'm an alcoholic. And I nearly died. I turned into a grease spot. He was 1,000 miles away. What do I know? The fantastic thing was that we went to that meeting, a mother and a son, and we came back two alcoholics. And the walls of Jericho fell. And my sobriety took on a different dimension. You have heard people say, I tried AA, it didn't work. AA don't work if you drink, honey. But I thought coming home from that meeting, oh my God, if I had failed one day, my own son could have said, my mama tried AA, it didn't work. And now I lay it on you. The difference between life and death to another sick alcoholic might very well depend on whether you are drunk or sober this day. That's what being responsible is. And that's what the joy of the journey is. And that's what the spiritual experience is. I guess I've talked overtime, or else I'm just on time. God is keeping my clock. But there have been experiences that have changed perspective in my life and that have changed priorities in my life. But one thing holds true. I hope when I die, God will ask me one question. I hope he will ask me what I did with his gift of sobriety. And I hope I'll be able to say, I gave it away. Thank you very much for putting it together.